Fly down, rainbows in the sky, let's fly away. Like a bird, you're free to see the boundless face of the earth. Let the wind blow you like a kite.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Destructo Discourse. This is episode 18 of a Dragon Ball Rewatch podcast. I am your host, Tyler, and joining the discourse this week is Gordy.
How's it going?
Jason.
Hello.
Aaron.
Ha ha ha.
And Dave, that was some foreshadowing.
Hello.
This week, we are back to training with King Kai. Didn't expect that, did you? But he has some new students. Old faces that we're familiar with, and we haven't seen for quite some time.
Tien, whoever, Chow, what's his face? The green guy.
Surfer
meaner,
boy.
And meaner Goku.
Meaner Goku.
Actually, Yamcha. As opposed to not Yamcha.
True Yamcha. Hallowed be thy name.
Introducing Shin Yamcha.
Well, as you all know, there is a prerequisite to training with King Kai.
Yeah, what's that?
You gotta make him laugh.
Yeah.
You gotta hit him with a real goofer.
A real knee slapper. Does he count
you have
this?
To,
I'm not
you
sure.
You have to hit him with any goofer.
Any kind of goofer will do.
Any goofer.
Right in the funny bone.
Sometimes you can just make noises. And that just does it.
That will be sufficient.
For him, yeah.
Sometimes you can just say some words that are kind of related to what's happening.
Yeah, sometimes you can say phrases that people know, and he still thinks
and
wild.
He will accept that. He will actually go out of his way to
hear you say
you.
It. But a prerequisite is a prerequisite, so I've asked you all to prepare a joke. And practice on me as if I'm King Kai for the day when you die and get to train with him.
Oh boy. Okay.
And that's not an if, that's a when.
Oh. Oh. Alright. Oh boy. I'm nervous. I gotta. Ooh, stage fright. A bit of a jitter. Okay. Brick wall behind me. Okay. Picture the audience naked. Picture the audience naked.
I am
naked.
Scraping
oh,
for a goofer.
Okay.
Aaron, you ready?
I'm ready.
Warm
Hit
us
me.
Up.
I have a knock knock joke, but I need someone else to start.
So, wait. So we have to just be the ones to say knock knock?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do it. All right, knock knock.
Who's there?
Wow,
Jason, you're really bad at knock knock jokes. It was a trap.
I hate it.
That is a
I've
very good trap.
I've been hoisted by my own mustard. What?
Getting worse.
Yeah. Okay. No, I've got one. I got one.
Jason, you got one?
Y'all want to hear a joke?
Please.
Yes.
You really want to hear a joke?
Mm-hmm.
Yamcha.
Yeah. I thought for a second that was just going to go past and no one was even going to laugh because it was so obvious.
Yeah. I mean, I gotcha.
One of y'all broke. So I'm in. I'm in the King Tag Club now. What you got?
I did acknowledge it.
I appreciate that.
Gordy, do you have a joke?
I'm looking at some long ones.
Okay.
Oh.
Like a novella?
They're not quite novellas, but they are...
A slow burn?
Kinda. Okay, I can read this. This is posted on an IGN forum. I don't know how it ends. I don't know if it's good.
That's not a good sign.
Well, yeah, only the best among us visit IGN.
I have looked at the first line of this. Would you like to hear it?
I would like to hear the entire thing, no questions asked.
We will find out if this is good together.
Please.
Oh, good.
A Tuffle commander is on patrol with an army of soldiers when a Saiyan appears at the top of a nearby hill and shouts, "Your power levels are so puny, 10 of your best warriors aren't worth one Saiyan." Maddened, the Tuffle commander gathers 10 of his best men. He says, "Listen, men, we can't have those barbaric Saiyans talking like that. Go up that hill and deal with the scum." The Saiyan runs down the other side of the hill out of sight, and the 10 Tuffles pursue him. 5 minutes later, the solitary Saiyan appears at the top of the hill and shouts, "Pathetic, your power levels are so puny, 100 of you Tuffles wouldn't even stand a chance."
Mm.
I don't know where this is going.
Is this going
to
be?
Now I'm going to have to find out.
There was a 5-minute break, so there's got to be some great payoff to this joke.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maddened beyond belief, the commander sends 100 men up the hill. "Listen, men, I want you to go up that hill and teach that Saiyan a lesson he won't forget." The Saiyan runs down the other side of the hill, and the 100 Tuffles pursue him. 5 minutes later, he appears at the top of the hill and shouts, "You're not even worth my time." The Tuffle commander says, "Listen, men, I want you all to go over that hill and make sure you catch that Saiyan and bring him back to answer for his crimes." This is the last line.
Mm-hmm. All
right. There's been a lot of buildup. I don't know if it's going to pay off.
Oh, it better.
Screams and shouts are heard for about 30 minutes. Jesus. Just then, a single Tuffle, battered and beaten, crawls over the top of the hill. "Watch out, sir. It's a trap. There was two of them."
That rules, actually.
Based on a true story.
Oh, I hate it. That owns.
Dave, you got one?
No, knock knock.
Who's there?
Kamehame.
Kamehame who?
Don't you threaten me.
Awful.
I think I need to relax after all these jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know where my good friend Piccolo goes to relax?
Where's that?
Planet Hammock.
It's a good name for a spa emporium.
I think so. Now, Tyler, you've been the faux King Kai, as it were. Mm-hmm. But what about you? Will you have?
I've got a joke.
Yeah, you have your entry ticket onto this little planet we call podcast.
Yeah, I'm gonna steal it from aminoapps.com.
Please.
They have a bunch of Dragon Ball Z jokes over here.
For free.
What do you get when you cross a carrot with a turtle?
I know.
Slow coup.
That was almost an un-joke.
That's pretty good.
Which are actually as hard to make as good jokes. So I have to give that person props, actually.
Why did the Yamcha cross the road?
Why?
He did and he died.
Now that was an unjoke. Perfectly executed.
How can you evoke such a clear image? Because as soon as you deliver that punchline, the crater shot just like leapt into my mind.
It's just emblazoned into our brains.
I have that that moment as a card in this starter deck.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, let me.
Have you framed it?
I haven't, but I should. It is.
I would recommend it.
It is called Orange Destruction.
Yep.
Accurate. It's an event. It reads, "Power. Your opponent destroys top X cards of his life deck. X equals 1 plus the number of drills you have in play."
How close are you to entering a tournament, would you say? Rules-wise.
I think, a grasp of the broad strokes. There are a lot of things referenced on the cards and no way to track them as far as I am aware. Like, this starter deck did not come with, like, counters or tokens or
like chips or tokens?
No, of any kind. But there are a lot of things to keep track of. Like,
interesting.
Like anger levels and personality levels and stages and...
If not a tournament, are you at least ready for an exhibition?
I am ready for an exhibit. I'm ready to
just like a one-on-one street match.
I'm ready to.
Are you ready to play at the live show?
I'm ready to play a child at this game,
and lose horribly.
Probably.
Yeah, because you know all those kids have like, you know, a whole deck of 20 golden Majin Gogetas or whatever.
They probably spent some bank on their decks.
Hey, as long as you don't die, you'll come back stronger than ever before.
That's my secret.
Let's talk about the episodes this week.
Hell yeah.
This week we are covering episodes 52, 53, and 54 of the Funimation dub of Dragon Ball Z. Mm-hmm. Not Kai, the original Dragon Ball Z.
Yep.
In its entirety.
Delicious.
Filler included?
Filler included.
All of it.
Mmm, delicious.
Episode 52, the English title is The Past and the Future.
The Japanese title roughly translates to "Listen to me, Goku. Hands off Frieza."
Okay.
What?
Yep. That's what. Okay. That's what it says.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Hands off Frieza. Get your hands off him, Goku.
The episode starts with a quick recap of the last episode, where we get to see our dead friends again,
aww,
talking through King Kai's back to Goku, still hurtling through space. And King Kai is starting to put some pieces together about some information he's hearing in regards to who the fuck is on Namek and what's going on.
Is pretty uninformed for a guy with infinite psychic remote viewing powers, I feel.
Well, it seems like it's hard to get a signal from Namek.
Yeah.
Because he says he has to wander over to a tree to get a better signal.
He should talk to Bulma. She seems pretty good at it.
Tune up his antennae.
I would like to throw something out.
Yeah.
The context of this, I'm sure I will remember as we go.
Please.
The first thing I wrote down for these episodes is, the moral is, let dead people be dead. which I would like to float out there as kind of a, just an overall thematic thought.
We'll see how that holds up carrying forward.
To the entirety of the series?
Just these three episodes. Maybe the whole series, though.
Okay. King Kai tries to get a sense of Namek, and when he does sense that Frieza is there, and he is electrified in terror.
Mm-hmm. He's
literally
so shocked that he's literally shocked. Meanwhile, Piccolo, Tien, and Shaotu have no idea what's happening or why he's over in a corner by a tree, freaking out.
King Kai gives basically the same warning about Frieza that he did for Vegeta. Which is, he's very strong, you're no match, give up.
He says he is the strongest you could ever face.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
the
not...
The girl on arc 2, man.
Yeah, which is
throw
not
in the
true.
Towel, Goku.
There
it's
are
over.
Many more episodes of this show.
It's another level above that, though, where like he specifically says that he thinks that if Goku tries to fight him, it'll just make him mad, and then he'll come destroy the Earth.
Right.
As punishment?
Yeah, right.
Which,
I mean, there are risks, for sure.
So, mm-hmm. King Kai tells him, like, you guys need to leave Namek. Just give up on this. And Piccolo cuts in and says, fuck that. Find the Dragon Balls and wish me back.
Get me away from these losers. So I can come kick your butt.
Piccolo cuts in and says, no, don't worry about it. With my combined strength, along with Goku, Gohan, and Krillin, we should beat Frieza no problem. He says, directly in front of Yamcha, Chaozu, and Tien.
I find it remarkable that he included Krillin. Like, Krillin has truly earned Piccolo's respect.
Yeah,
they worked well as a team.
Yeah. By facing the Saiyans.
What I just realized? This has got to be a strange conversation for Tien and Chaozu and Yamcha. Because they don't know if Goku beat Vegeta and Nappa.
True.
Yeah.
Maybe King Kai told them.
Maybe.
One would hope he'd fill them in.
They seem mostly filled in on the plan.
They seem pretty relaxed about things.
Wouldn't it be screwed up if they come back to Earth and they're like, oh, and they're just so completely completely misinformed. They're like, all right, we're going to head back to Earth. We're going to take on Raditz.
So Aaron and I noticed something in this episode. Piccolo's ears got way bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Is that just us?
No.
Okay.
You're gonna see a lot of shifting to models.
He got some real big ol' ears in the first, major portions of DBZ. I think they get smaller over time.
I would like you all, going forward, to pay close attention to Krillin's size in relation to other characters.
Oh, yeah.
I will keep an eye on this.
It's pretty good.
I do want to note that Goku's reaction to Piccolo chiming in on the King Kai phone, King Kai phone 10, that... there's just no animosity there. It's just 100%. Oh, it's my friend Piccolo.
They're chill now.
We're cool. He blasted a hole through my chest. We're tight.
Yeah,
it's all good.
They kind of dropped that plot line.
A chest hole for a chest hole.
Mm-hmm.
Seems fair.
You know what they say, the quickest way to a Goku's heart is with the Mankan Kozepo.
I have heard them say that.
Or
somebody should tell Tichi that.
Oh, God.
Oh. Maybe they should.
Goku, dinner's ready, but it'll take about 5 minutes to charge it.
Oh, no. I mean, he would still come. Like.
True.
So Piccolo demands King Kai to start training them to fight Frieza, which means it's time for the joke test.
Mm-hmm.
And we cut back to Namek briefly, where Dende and Krillin are still about 5 hours away from the Elder's place, because Dende flies very slow, because he's still learning.
He's the only one I've noticed who flies doing the Superman pose.
Yeah.
Both arms out.
He's the littlest green.
Tiny green.
On a spectrum of greens.
Vegeta senses them again, and he starts to sniff them out. And we cut back over to King Kai's planet. And so the great joke contest begins, the narrator lets us know.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
Yamcha and Chiaotzu pass with no problem. Tien and Piccolo, not so much.
I've got a theory about this. I think Yamcha and Chiaotzu passed with flying colors, not by telling a joke, but by just recounting how they died.
Yamcha just showed King Kai a picture of the crater.
Yeah, it never even... Chiaotzu's like, yeah, it never even left a scratch on his armor.
I was going to say that Chiaotzu stepped up first, and King Kai just laughed at his stupid-looking face.
He did have kind of a funny face in the joke-telling role.
Yes,
that's true. I mean, he has a clown face.
And he is Pagliacci. Truly.
God damn it.
And I have another theory.
But doctor, I am Chiaotzu.
And I have an additional theory as to why the others are having such trouble. I think Piccolo just has really bad delivery because he's very deadpan.
Yeah.
And Tien just maybe like used some of his old school, like old crane school jokes that he heard around the dojo, and they're probably just very offensive.
Tien seems very self-conscious.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He is like somebody in a level one improv class. First time on stage.
Truly does not understand the game.
Adorable little blush.
In order for Tien to get by, Yamcha cheats and just gives Tien a zinger to use, and King Kai seems to have no problem with this.
And when they're talking about this, like they've been down and they're whispering to each other, like really dramatically, and they're talking about telling a bad joke, and it looks like they are in a foxhole getting ready to rush a machine gun nest.
Well, that is what King Kai is.
And yeah. King Kai is standing behind them, just like so ready for it.
The joke that he uses, at least in the English dub, he says, "You can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish."
He has some trouble with that delivery, but when he finally belts it out, it's like he's belting out an attack.
Yeah, just like Goku.
It is a barrage of ki blasts.
It is, yeah, it is what he
understands. He does solar flare. He does his multiplication technique.
He does the...
A joke
giant
four times
head
at
of himself shows up behind King Kai.
He does, like, the full-on, like, Kikoho pose.
Yeah.
It's not quite... It's basically just, like, a visual flourish, but this joke... almost gets a dust clearing.
That's true. That's true. It is the joke Kikoho, or otherwise known as the Hee-Ho-Ho. Anywho's it.
Wow.
Anywho's it. Wow. I was very curious, I looked up what the joke was in Japanese, because y'all know King Kai's ready for some language puns.
Mm-hmm.
The joke is, you think what's up your nose is a secret, but it's snot. And apparently that works linguistically in the original as well.
It makes more sense.
Does it?
Does it?
No.
It's like the same structure.
Yeah, I realized it as I said it. I was trying to be generous.
So back on Namek, Krillin notices that Vegeta's on their trail again, and he hides.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, they are saved by happenstance, because Vegeta senses Zarbon nearby, decides to pay him a visit. Vegeta's having a hard time, like, focusing when he's on Namek, it seems like. He's being dragged off in all different directions.
He is horny for another assassination.
So everyone on King Kai's planet starts training, except for Piccolo, because he still hasn't done the joke bit.
He doesn't give a fuck.
Bubbles is up first, and Piccolo catches him instantly.
He has no time for this.
But we don't know how.
Just very fast speed.
I guess, but like we don't know if he used some kind of trick like Goku did, or if he's just like just got it done.
It happens off screen, so we can't be sure.
He's not doing any of the business of following the monkey. He goes to where the monkey will be.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, like in Galaga.
Piccolo is a lot like Galaga when you really think about it. And Krillin's like Huber.
He swears just as often.
Yeah.
King Kai tells Piccolo that he's not allowed to train without making him laugh, And Piccolo manages to do this just by muttering the phrase monkey business under his breath.
Yep.
While holding a monkey.
Piccolo even says, like he declines that as a joke. He says, yeah. like, no, like, that wasn't a joke. And King Kai, like, goes out of his way to say, like, oh, no, that was. That counts.
Mm-hmm. You're good.
Like, now, you're allowed to train.
Now, Tyler, are you ready to hear something even dumber than that?
Always.
Here's how Piccolo gets into the King Kai Chuckle Club. He says, I don't wish to undertake any training under you if it undermines my own dignity. And King Kai laughs because he uses the sound for under 3 times in a row in the same sentence. That's it.
Standards are low over there, huh?
I just realized it's a very important question.
Yeah.
What's that?
What joke do you think King Yemma told him to be allowed to train?
Possible it was pre-comedian phase, but I think we should assume that King Yemma did have to.
Maybe? He probably just laughed at the name Yemmalock.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Like we all did.
He just says,
yeah, you tell me how to improve my Yemmalock.
He just
King Yemma just didn't get any of King Kai's jokes, and that's why he has the laugh condition now.
Mm.
He will only take students who will laugh at his jokes.
Ah, I see.
My theory was that Yemma just said, I got this special fruit in a tree in hell, and it looks kind of like a butt.
He said it as timidly as that.
He said it under his breath.
He doesn't like to bring it up.
No.
So back on Namek, Vegeta intercepts Zarbon, because he's itching for a fight, and the two of them begin zipping around each other, because as Gordy has noted, that's how you show power in this show.
Yep.
I realized Zippin. That this fight is why Vegeta's hair had been blowing in the wind so much more than usual that episode, because it would be strange for him to have stiff hair opposite Zarbon's luscious locks.
Beautiful, flowing green.
So they're throwing punches and beams at each other, and Vegeta is too fast for Zarbon, mopping the floor with him. And Zarbon gets knocked to the floor, and at first it seems like he's crying, but actually he's laughing.
Ah, the classic, the switcheroo.
This is not exactly the scenario, but I believe Vegeta is doing a black speedy dodge.
What will this accomplish?
Yeah, what does that enable him?
It stops an energy attack, and Vegeta can discard a card from his hand. If he does, opponent discards a card from, I guess, Sarbon's hand in this case.
It is more fun to imagine them playing a card game against each other.
Arcade where he challenges the dire rat and they just sit down and start playing Bejeweled or whatever.
Right. Puzzle Quest.
I feel like Zarbon would play some Candy Crush.
Well, he'd get down on some Candy Crush.
He has to do something to let off steam after cleaning up Frieza's messes all day.
It's Candy Crush, but it's just little planets that he lines up and blows up.
They explode. So there are a lot of very nice shots of Zarbon's butt here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And strong stuff.
Yes.
His
powerful
leg warmers.
Thighs.
His very arm warmers.
Very powerful leg warmers, yes.
That cape can't hide everything.
And also, like...
It's not designed to.
No, hell no. He wouldn't deprive the world of that. This fight gets really gay really fast, I'm just saying. Why don't you try me for yourself?
Is there sexual tension between Vegeta and Zarbon?
I think so.
Is it orange? Orange sexual tension? Is there a card for that?
Yeah, there is.
Please, I need it. I need it like the deserts need the rain.
No, there isn't.
Damn.
Okay, I was terrified that you were being serious.
You lied to me.
Nah, nothing like that.
So this episode ends with Zarbon still laughing. And it seems like he has a surprise planned for Vegeta.
Perhaps a Zarbon surprise?
Before we move on, I have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
What did this episode have to do with the past and future?
Who knows?
It's a good question.
The past, maybe...
They should have called it Friend or Foe.
Maybe they should have, actually.
Perhaps.
I did write down, are they talking about Zarbon's wiener? So I did notice some sexual tension in that fight.
Thanks, past Gordy.
The past and future Gordy.
In the credits, I noticed for the first time that in addition to his many, 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 many other roles, Chris Sabat is also Bubbles.
that's true.
Which made me very happy.
I forgot about that.
Couldn't afford Frank Welker for that.
No. D. Bradley Barker was busy.
Chris about plays all my favorite characters.
Mm-hmm. Episode 53. The English title is Zarbon's Surprise.
The Japanese translation roughly sums out to nothing but goosebumps. The handsome warrior Zarbon's devilish transformation.
Ooh.
Is this title written by Zarbon?
Of course it is.
The episode begins with Zarbon claiming that beauty is only skin deep. Vegeta is not impressed.
No.
And he asks a bizarre question.
What was it? I didn't take it down.
What are you going to do? Start making faces at me and hope you scare me away? It's hopeless.
Good one. Good one, Jeets.
It's a very specific guess.
I thought for a minute that this transformation involved him removing his delightful lavender compression sleeves. But there was just a shot of him just adjusting them slightly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here we see a confirmation that Vegeta's armor stretching when he turned into the Great Ape is just a property that Frieza Force armor has.
One size literally fits all.
Apparently yeah. They need it.
So Zarbon's doing like a Beauty and the Beast thing.
Okay.
Because he transforms into a yucky frog man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Vegeta says, forgive me if I missed the beauty.
There you go. That's not bad, Vegeta. You didn't need to laugh that one, but
it's about at the level of, you can't miss it, it's green.
Now that Zarbon's yucky looking, he's also a lot faster and stronger.
Yeah.
Well, I'm convinced that Vegeta only comes out bad in this exchange because he was so surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Vegeta starts getting the shit just beat right out of him.
Yeah. You know, you've really got a long road ahead when you're a young gay boy watching anime and you find Monster Zarbon way hotter than Humanoid Zarbon. You're just like, well...
I learned an interesting thing about myself this week.
Here we go. gonna wind up on a forum with this attitude.
Maybe this is why Vegeta was so shocked.
Got a long road ahead of me, huh?
Yeah, that is the journey Vegeta is taking right now.
I mean, you could make a legit story out of that.
He always had mm-hmm. a crush on Zarbon, and then the transformation happened, and he goes, oh.
Oh,
oh, oh go no. on.
So all ever. That... All that beauty hit him at once.
Do they have Disney in this world?
Because
Zarbon makes like a Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they have comic. Fairy tales, at least.
Do they?
And they've reached space.
Think they have Disney movies there.
But think that he's at least watched The Princess Bride.
Oh, for sure. Because
sure, yeah. Before the transformation sequence, it was very much the masked man saying... secret to tell you.
Yes.
I'm not actually left-handed.
Yeah.
And then later on when Vegeta's in the tank, Zarbon is saying that he wants to heal him up before he tortures him, very much like the albino in The Princess Bride.
Huh.
I think Zarbon's a fan.
Would Zarbon's favorite Disney movie be Beauty and the Beast? Just because he relates? Is there a better option?
It's pretty on the nose.
What?
But I'm a fan.
Zarbon's not a particularly subtle person, I think.
No. Oh no.
I don't think you're allowed to be subtle if you work for Frieza.
Like maybe Cinderella.
Oh.
Something
classy.
Yeah.
Our next intro for the next episode will be what is every character's favorite Disney movie?
Here's all your favorite Dragon Ball Z characters reimagined as Disney princesses.
Yes, please.
There you go.
BuzzFeed quota met.
Draw that and get famous overnight.
Yeah. Someone's Tumblr just lit up like crazy.
We start getting some check-ins on everybody's training. Goku's still doing sweet flips and kicks.
Yep.
Except now he's doing it 50 times gravity.
50G!
So his bones are dust.
Yep.
They should be.
They're the idea of
so
bones,
much
really.
That way. That's how bird bones are, right?
They're a dim memory of bones.
The ghost of bones.
My favorite young adult novel.
He turned it up to this point because it was just still too easy.
Right.
So, you know, Goku is one of those fucking people who played can't have any fun with Dark Souls until they get to New Game Plus 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 Plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get good.
That basement is just chock full of skeletons.
Piccolo is patiently waiting for the other chuckle fucks to catch Bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
Tien is using a hammer to catch Bubbles.
Seems like
overkill.
I think that's a bit against the rules. I thought that was Gregory's game. Did he call out sick?
This is literally a Tom and Jerry skit.
It really is.
Yes.
All three of them have failed to concoct the plan of run the opposite direction of the monkey.
Or just, like, split up and try to corner him.
Right.
There are three of you.
Like, they are running in a line after Bubbles.
What they do succeed in, however, is smashing Piccolo's hat under his foot.
He doesn't seem bothered.
No. That brought up some questions, though. I thought that round, shiny, purple part on top was solid, but it just dented in like nothing else.
Yeah, I thought that as well. Maybe it's the gravity.
Big old hammer.
Oh, maybe.
And, yeah, it is 10 times gravity.
Vegeta is having some real trouble with Zarbon, mm-hmm. but he is getting very good at tucking and rolling off of beams.
Yep.
This is after he gets punched straight through a plateau.
This entire episode, Krillin and Dende have been stopping to check on the progress of the fight through their senses, and then lamenting the fact that they still haven't made it.
Yeah. Are we there yet?
Like, you would get there a lot faster if you didn't literally stop flying every couple seconds.
I would like to point out, Krillin, at one of these moments, turns around and says, he says something like, maybe they'll just kill each other and we won't have to worry about them. Which, like, just continues his policy of strict non-intervention. We will not lift a hand, like, on either side of this fight. But maybe the problem will just solve itself.
Zarbon does a super speed suplex of Vegeta right into the ground.
This is an orbital atomic pile driver.
And he creates a new pond.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just for Namek.
Aww. Right. Who says he doesn't put a little good back into the world?
After they have destroyed huge swaths of it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Zarbon untransforms, and he just decides to leave Vegeta to drown.
Nobody ever double taps.
No, not in this world.
Even the ones who know that they should.
Yep. I have a bit of a revelation for you guys.
Yeah.
We have I want to go back. I want to walk us back a little bit back on the King Kai's planet.
Okay.
During this Tom and Jerry sketch, there was some kind of nonsense where King Kai's eating himself a nice little steak, having a little bit of wine,
mm-hmm.
having a bit of a fun King Kai lunch.
Just a fun King Kai picnic.
Mm-hmm. For one, for him. Tien, like, runs up with a hammer and just, like, barely misses him, and, like, all the food just goes flying into the up into the sky like a big old skit, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you remember King Kai lands, and it's that thing where you hold out the plate, and the plate falls into your hand, and the food perfectly falls into your plate, and all that stuff. Not a scratch, not a...
Exactly where it belongs.
Right where it belongs. Mm-hmm. And
this is why he's a martial arts master.
Exactly. And King Kai remarked in English that his steak has been tenderized.
I did forget to write that down.
Mm-hmm. But...
Your mind blocked it out.
The meat.
In the Japanese version, he just says in English, "Rice catch." As he catches the rice next to the stick. I like how
it's a really good name for a move.
Rice catch. It's a blue rice catch. I like how immediately after this scene, we cut to Vegeta being agonized because we just hear him go, blood running down his... It's amazing.
He's also being tenderized.
Oh yeah, quite tenderized.
Very tenderized. I forget wherein this King Kai decides to check in on Goku and reminding him of the thing he's not supposed to do, just in case he forgot.
Don't you fight Frieza.
Don't you do it.
I mean,
which guys... I feel like with all this training, it's possible that Goku could have forgotten about Frieza.
Even if he was training, I think that's possible.
Here's the thing. Don't you ever tell Goku you can't do a thing, or you can't fight a thing.
He's gonna fight it twice as much.
Don't do it. Goku's like, come on.
Just a little.
But I wanna.
I want to fight Frieza a little bit.
Fight him a little.
Can I just fight him slightly?
Just one punch.
Oh, I just stopped myself from singing an anime song.
Krillin and Dende finally arrive at the eldest Namek's house. Gordy, did you write down Krillin's reaction when they get there?
Not exactly. He says something like, how's it still standing with it being this obvious?
Yeah. Krillin suggests that maybe they're already dead inside.
Oh, yes.
You're such an easy target.
Like, oh, we shouldn't have even come. Why'd we bother? Instead of just, like, checking.
Yes, I like the...
So intent is he on not doing anything.
I like the nefariousness of where the elder's chamber on top of this pointy precipice. Like, did you just stick him up there so he can't get down? Like, what are you doing?
Well, he went up there a while ago, and now he's just so big and old that he can't get down.
Nope. This is his version of Kami's lookout. It's about as tall as they could build it.
So Krillin gets introduced to Guru's bodyguard named Nail.
He's fun.
You know, like snail.
Oh, I get it.
It's a snail pun.
And he invites him inside to speak with Guru, who is the eldest Namek.
Mm-hmm. Is Guru a snail pun?
I don't think so.
Did Guru just name all 108 or more of his children after snails?
It's what he was into at the time.
Just like snails.
Back over at Vegeta's water pit, a dragon bird lands in the water.
Yeah, this is just a Pokemon.
Straight
Vegeta's
up.
Gotta catch them all. And eat them underwater like an alligator.
Catch them indeed he does, because his arm shoots out of the water. And he grabs it, and he drowns it for no reason.
So do you think, like a gator, he just grabs it for a good boy Vegeta snack, and just kind of...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In those few seconds, he just swallowed the entire bird.
I was going to say, he just death rolls him into submission.
Pick the bones clean.
Left it to sink to the bottom.
And then he pulls himself out of the water, and he's battered quite a bit. That's all I have for this episode.
He seems to be aware of the Miracle Zenkai power because he's like, joke's on you, dipshit, you didn't kill me. It was my plan this whole time to get the shit kicked out of me, so take that!
Maybe he just plans to get stronger.
Well, see, that's the thing. Saiyans are just a literal example of, that Kelly Clarkson song.
Since you've been gone, I can't breathe for the first time. I'm not in the pond. I ate a swan.
Should go into the Weird Al business.
That's all I got.
She had to preface the song with the following as a fan base parody.
Episode 54. The English title is Guru's Gift.
The Japanese title roughly translates to Defend the Planet of Hope. Krillin's astonishing power-up.
They keep calling it that, huh?
Guess so.
The Planet of Hope.
Yeah.
Well?
Yeah, I mean...
Just a weird pick.
For now. Yeah. I guess it's fine.
So Guru apparently fell asleep while he was talking to Krillin.
Just took a little snooze.
Krillin does manage to wake him up again, and he fills him in on his motives, and how he knows about the Dragon Balls in the first place. And Guru's like, you know what, come over here. I'm gonna figure out the rest of this. I'm done talking to you. And Guru takes a handful of Krillin's skull.
And just melts it clean off his shoulders. Just kidding.
He reads his mind to fill in the gaps. So a curious thing happens here, because Guru starts to get a bizarre flashback about Kami and Piccolo's origins, which he is somehow pulling out of Krillin's mind.
Yep. Don't know how he knows any of that shit.
Why is that in there?
Nope, that was Bulma's thing. Last I remember, anyway.
Maybe he talked with King Kai about it while he was hanging out on the lookout. Oh, not King Kai. The other one.
Kami?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Kami filled them all in.
Yeah.
While they were training.
There's some interesting... We see basically a repeat of what we heard before. You know, Kami was originally this one dude who split into two dudes. Yeah. But we noted that Kami is the son of Katas, which is in fact a snail pun. a snail pun for the name, it's based on the Japanese word katatsumori, meaning snail.
Ah,
and Mori,
the other half
the other
of
one.
Mori.
Yeah.
Maybe they're brothers.
Maybe.
Well, no, that couldn't be, because Mori is the son of Guru.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it's,
shit.
And it's also it's just straight up said here, like, the person who split into Kami and Piccolo was just named Kami. I'm pretty sure that's what Guru is saying.
Well, no, that's the...
Yeah,
that's the...
I think that's a Funimation dub goof.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Because
yeah.
Canonically, here's my favorite part about Kami and Piccolo's origin story. This plot-critical character is canonically known just as the Nameless Namekian.
Yes.
The main character of Namekian Planescape Torment.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, the Nameless Namekian has also been mistakenly referred to as Kamikolo, but we won't get to that for a bit.
Oh, oh my god.
Guru is satisfied by Krillin's motives and good nature, and he bestows the one-star ball to him.
You can exploit my resources for the right reasons, child.
Do you think if he read Goku's mind, he would have given him the Dragon Ball?
No. Nope.
I mean, Goku's allowed
I'm
to ride...
I'm curious what he would have found.
Goku is allowed to ride the flying Nimbus.
He is pure. He's pretty focused on food and fighting.
And punching. Uh-huh.
There's not a lot of room in there for bad intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I feel like if Guru asked, like, what are you going to use the Dragon Balls for, young man? Sitting on his lap like Santa Claus or something. Goku legitimately would not remember why he came. Like, I'm not actually sure.
I'm just here to fight a strong guy.
I heard a Frieza.
You'll beam your eye out, kid.
I did note, like, I've talked about this before, but like when he was talking to the other Z Warriors on the, you know, on the Kai phone, he's like, legitimately, he seems like, because we don't. Goku doesn't have it in him to lie.
Yeah.
Or to be dishonest.
Right.
That's just not... He doesn't have that ability.
It's not an option he's aware of.
So he seems to be, like, genuinely happy to hear from all of them.
Yeah.
Like, he has no contempt for these people who he could kill with his little finger if he wanted to. Which, like, as fucking a weird, bloodthirsty asshole as he is, like, that speaks well of him to me.
In an interesting way. Yeah, I can see that.
He doesn't
yeah.
look down
like, it's
on
not...
them. They're just
yeah.
kind of there. Like nice fireflies.
Yeah, there you go.
That's how he views his friends.
He has no particular malice for the ants.
Little bugs that
feet.
Don't bother me.
Well, they're pleasant bugs, like fireflies.
I'm going to keep them in this jar forever.
This jar of my friends.
This is my friend's jar.
This jar is called King Kai Planet.
Guru lets Krillin know that he is on a time limit, though, to gather the rest, because Guru is aware that he doesn't have long to live anymore, and once he's gone, the Dragon Balls will also be gone, in the same way as Kami.
Joke's on you, kid, I'm old as hell.
I like his big, goofy old man smile.
Body made at least 108 children. It's not got much left.
He's looking pretty good, honestly,
if they just,
that, in that context.
If they just let Guru die, that's going to solve a lot of their problems. Which
it's going to make their original problem bigger.
Right, which I think is why I wrote down the moral is let dead people be dead. Like, just let them be dead, and then Frieza and Vegeta will not be immortal. And that seems like a reasonable trade to me.
I feel like that's what Piccolo would do if he was still alive.
Yeah.
Gordy, like, you would trade Chaozu's life for Frieza's non-immortality?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. You could keep the clown man in heaven.
But, like, he's already dead. You're just not bringing him back.
Not only does Frieza not become immortal, but we don't have to... Yamcha stays dead.
Right.
So there's, like, three benefits.
Yeah,
here.
Nobody has to go to any of his baseball games ever again.
Would that be a fair trade?
Do we get to go to more baseball games?
The rest of Yamcha's mortality and just give that to Frieza. So he just lives a little bit longer.
That's a powerful curse.
Does Frieza have to be on the baseball team?
Yes, he does.
Yes.
He is contractually obliged to remain on the baseball team.
freezes the new pinch hitter of the Titans.
Guru offers to unlock Krillin's untapped potential as power, which is a thing Krillin is not convinced that he has.
I mean, poor he's guy. Been around enough stronger people to convince himself of that, but I like the idea of just Guru putting his hand to Krillin's head and just unlocking all of his DLC for free.
We are about to witness a Namekian heritage drill.
Oh
my god.
Which is going to make Krillin's energy attacks deal plus X life cards of damage, where X is his MP's level. I do not know what MP level is.
Well, it's very likely that, much like in the show, it doesn't mean anything.
It's truly... Yeah.
Am I wrong about that? This literally never matters, right?
Oh, yeah.
It matters a little bit.
Does it?
Yeah.
It doesn't not matter.
There's some magic happening.
It matters to Krillin.
I'm just so surprised with, like... I just want Krillin to immediately be like, I don't have any powers, and Guru's just like... Wow, yeah, you're right. I checked. Yep.
How'd you even get here?
Dave, I think a case could be made that if this didn't happen to Krillin, some of the other stuff that happens to him later would happen a lot worse.
That is true. That is fair.
And faster.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And I suppose they do end up needing every second of time, pretty much, that it results.
Krillin has his power awakened and is immediately letting it go to his head.
Oh, he is drunk with power.
He enjoys it.
For about 5 minutes.
So, I have a question for you. Not really a question, I have a bit of a rhyme for you.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened then? Well, on Namek they say that Krillin's power level grew 3 sizes that day.
And are you then... really going to say 3 sizes?
Yeah.
Are you sure on that?
Yeah, hang on. Because the true meaning of Guru came through. Because Krillin found the strength of 10 Krillins. Plus 2. Let's hope you won't immediately eat shit later.
Here's hoping.
Is that what that book is?
Yeah.
It's the last ending.
How Krillin stole Namekness.
Krillin stole power from Namek's last leader.
Well, he specifically brings that up.
It's a longer... Yeah, it's true.
There's a moment where Guru says, like, oh, thank you for something, and Krillin goes, like, really, there's no need to thank me. Which I think is very true.
It's very literal.
Because if he had his way, Dende would be dead.
It's 100% Gohan.
I just wanted to point that out too.
Yes. I'd honestly feel better if you didn't thank me, because that's going to weigh on my conscience.
He asks Guru, you know, does this have any effect on your power or your life force?
Mm-hmm.
And Guru gives kind of a weird answer where he says,
The short answer is no.
What was the long answer?
A little bit.
Is there a reason you're dying?
Well, the long answer is no, said really long, but he gets tired and takes a nap halfway through.
Interrupted by a short coughing fit.
Krillin asks if he can bring Gohan back to Guru so that he can have his power unlocked as well, because he has probably significantly more than Krillin did.
Yeah, he wants this exploit to be widespread.
Truly utilized. So Krillin is really cooking now with his new powers. He's a lot faster than he was before.
He's zooming.
Now he's cooking with petrol.
Zarbon's crony finally stumbles on that village that Vegeta was ransacking, and he learns from a not-quite-dead-yet Namekian that Vegeta took the Dragon Ball. And I'm not updating my count, because I assumed this man was dead, and now he is.
Right, exactly.
So we're still at 86. No song this week. Zarbon, back at the ship, gets rightly chewed out by Frieza for 1, not checking that Vegeta was dead, and 2, not asking him about the Dragon Ball's location first.
Yep. You fucked up today, Zarby.
Frieza summons the Ginyu Force to Planet Namek, and he expects them to bring scouters with them.
The Ginyu Force, you say?
The Ginyu Force.
Oh.
Zarbon's not pleased to hear about that.
Yeah, Zarbon kind of freaks out.
Yeah.
He's like, I got this. You don't need to call those weirdos.
We absolutely need to call these weirdos.
Yeah, we need to see Ginyu.
He also seems to think that they will do more think they will cause more problems than they solve. Like, they will do enough damage to outweigh
right
the benefits of bringing them in. It's a good build-up.
Excited to see what all this fuss is about.
this here Ginyu force. Frieza is getting kind of irritated with how much he's hearing about Saiyans lately. He thought he was done with that.
I blew up that planet fucking forever ago.
Zarbon goes back to collect the busted up Vegeta and brings him back to Frieza's ship for interrogation. And while Bulma and Gohan are waiting for Krillin to head back, they notice on the dragon radar that there's still a ball over at the village Vegeta was at.
Just chilling.
Why not go get it?
Gohan decides to borrow the radar, just quickly pop over there, grab the ball, and the episode ends with Zarbon having Vegeta thrown in the healing tank. Gohan is racing over to the village, and Krillin is heading back to the headquarters with his Dragon Ball.
It also gets kind of like BDSM again. I'm going to have so much fun making you talk.
He wants him to be very healthy so that he can make him not healthy with torture.
Yeah.
It's okay, Zarbon, whatever floats again. Your boat. No kink shaming on this podcast.
Nuh-uh. We're not going to yuck yums.
Exactly. I also did note something from the subtitles. That yellow xenomorph-looking guy who killed the last witness and fucked up.
Yeah.
He has a name. His name is Orlin.
Orlin?
Orlin?
Yes.
Did you catch the name of the henchman that Frieza tells to call the Ginyus?
Oh, that's Apool.
That is Apool.
Oh my god.
Guess what his fruit is.
Yeah, he has an entire wiki page just dedicated to Apool's race. It's just called Apool's race.
Of course there is.
All of the weird, invasive. Like,
the
long...
xenomorphs?
Yeah, xenomorph heads, insane armor. Orlin. Is it just orange? Yeah, it's orange, because the Japanese name is Orin.
That's a berry in Pokemon, I'm pretty sure.
I think it's also just, like, a name.
Wouldn't that be the most incredible next-level thing for Toriyama to do if he just throws in a character whose name isn't a pun or a reference to anything? Like, it's just a normal name.
Like Mark.
Jeff.
And watches people like go Mark. Fucking nuts trying to figure it out.
This December, Goku will fight his strongest enemy yet. Tim.
King Kai yells at him, "You can't fight Tim!"
I forbid you!
The universe.
I'm telling you!
You must never fight Tim!
Or surely you will incur his wrath!
It's the name of the movie. Dragon Ball Super, Wrath of Tim.
The Tim of Tim Allen.
Oh no.
The world's strongest Tim.
Dragon Ball Super, Tool Time.
Is that the noise he makes? It's pretty close. Yeah, that's the Tool Time noise.
I'm imagining the dun 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 dun.
I'm going to try to edit that in for you, Jason. any other thoughts for the episodes this week?
Well, I think Goku's going to die because
of his bones.
Because of his super bad bones. Because we ended the episode with him being unable to get up from the ground.
Yeah.
With the shit stuck at 50 times Earth gravity. And he resigns to just taking a nap.
He just fell asleep there. Which I would probably do too. I'm not going to blame him for that.
No.
If I were in that situation, I'd probably just go to sleep.
If that's going to do it for the episodes, that means it's time to hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Did you guys like a brief recap of last week?
Yes, on the last episode of Hail Satan.
Last week, we didn't talk about Mr. Satan.
Oh. Okay then.
We're just talking about Earth and Earth stuff.
What's going on down there?
What's up with Earth?
A new bar opened up in New East City, run by one Barry Tender. And last week it got named the Landing Pad, or the Landing Pod. I couldn't quite hear what was said, so we're between those two. And it's named as such because that invisible space cocoon full of green-eyed kids landed directly on top of it. The children, who were seeking to be taught by Hercule, see that Barry has a signed photo of Hercule on the wall, and they assume that Barry is Hercule's disciple. So, the space kids started to tend bar, mimicking Barry, a la Goku and Bubbles, assuming that what he was doing was intense training, Emmy, the shin-kicking girl, becomes the shin-kicking bouncer.
Excellent.
Zeshin and Bun noticed that there was a photo of Yamcha on the wall that was signed Love Dad. And that night, the two of them and Barry all shared the same dream, which was them watching Yamcha play baseball for a sold-out stadium of other Yamchas.
God.
The farmer learned that there was another space pod landing on Earth, so he starts to investigate, and he does not trust these green-eyed children. And, additionally, some of the kids found some of his recordings about Frieza that he had taken out of Raditz's pod. So they're kind of dancing around each other.
Slowly circling closer and closer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this episode of Hail Satan brings us to a head?
It could. Mm. I did have another farmer thing to add to his lore, but it could have happened at any time.
Yes, I demand it.
During his investigations, I want him to have stumbled on the memory banks of Mr. Robot.
Oh, shit.
Out in the wasteland.
I think we can basically assume that the farmer at this point is just a Roomba for old tech. He just he just hoovers it out of any crevice.
Well, the rest of the world just leaves it. They just leave their trash wherever it falls.
But he can leave no stone unturned.
And no, he finds it all.
Mm-hmm. And he just searches for the truth.
Absolutely.
So what does he do? Does he reactivate Mr. Robot?
Well, he should put Mr. Robot into a new body.
Hmm.
Because the old body is very much not usable.
Does Mr. Robot become the sassy, irritated robot butler to his conspiracy hideout?
Ay, ay, ay.
Oh, boy.
Does he become his Alfred?
His alpha.
Alfred and his alpha.
His Zordon?
Rangers!
What would he actually get from Mr. Robot's memory banks? Like, it's just...
Mostly just how to cook mushrooms good.
Yeah.
Well... That's a valuable skill.
He actually learns a lot about, like, preparing... He can prepare a very, very robust shiitake stir-fry. so much so that he decides to get a job as a line cook for the landing pod in order to keep a closer eye on them green-eyed children. How about that?
Based on his recipe.
Yeah.
Oh.
The strength of his mushroom recipe.
Yes.
That's
his audition.
How much does he learn about Gohan from Mr. Robot? How much does Gohan tell Mr. Robot?
That much?
Mostly crying.
Yeah. I don't know that much of it is actionable.
Yeah, I didn't think that the farmer would gain anything of importance from this outside of just having a new sassy friend.
He just wanted Mr. Robot back.
Yeah.
That's
just
very
loose ends.
Acceptable.
Yeah, I like that.
I do like that bar thing though.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's a better bar food than like cooked mushrooms?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen some bars do like what is it, like beer battered mushrooms?
Yeah,
like fried.
Fried and whatnot.
Yeah.
I think you could have a portobello burger.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I could really go for one of those right now. I'm not even joking. Ring up the farmer. I'm hungry. Super Saiyan size it if you could.
Nice.
So what else is going on Earth this week?
What are Beelzebub, Barbara, and Launch up to? How's their crime syndicate?
They're still planning to kidnap the mayor.
Ah.
We haven't moved forward on that heist.
What's their plot? What's their plan? How do you get Becky Hafford out in the open? How do you pull out the scheme?
How do you get Becky Hafford out? Like a Yamcha-shaped pinata or something?
a pinyamcha, as it were.
A pinyamcha?
I'm upset.
Maybe they have a Yamcha memorial game at the Titan Stadium.
They send Becky Hafford some premier box seats.
Mm-hmm.
To catch the new Titans playoffs, and we promise Yamcha's there.
The Titans are milking... You know, we're the team that Yamcha played for mm-hmm. everything it's worth, right?
Wait a minute, we're the team that Yamcha started a riot in.
You may recall.
Which was more fun than any of our actual games.
Fighting the aliens. Because that was our good friend Hercule.
Yeah, and his friend Cannoli, who looks suspiciously like Yamcha.
They use Cannoli.
I was going to say, Bielsa Barbara knows Cannoli. Launch knows Yamcha.
They can
put these pieces together. So and just... this is where Cannoli makes his turn to the side of evil.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
He helps them in their heist, or their
holy
kidnapping
cannoli.
Plot.
Becomes an unholy cannoli.
Oh.
No.
It's funny that turning aside from Satan is the path of evil.
That is... Huh.
Ironically,
more
yes.
Japanese social commentary.
You know what?
The evils of Western religion.
You're right. Shit.
Totally on brand.
I'm going to say that they give Becky Hafford those boxed seat tickets, and they sneak Cannoli in dressed up like Yamcha.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't very hard.
Yeah. No. Not a stretch.
Mm. Put him
it's
in
mostly
something...
just drawing a scar on his face.
Yeah. One Sharpie and you're done.
Are there, like, big posters of Yamcha, like, out in front of the thing, the stadium?
There might be a statue.
There might be a statue. Because I want whatever it is.
If that GoFundMe went through.
Destroyed, and for Launch to put one of Tien up instead. And that is the distraction for the kidnapping.
Oh, that's right. That statue has to come down.
So Launch tears down the statue outside, causes a commotion. They sneak Cannoli in, who is dressed like Yamcha, to coerce Becky, his old girlfriend.
Hey, Becky, I'm here and I totally love you and want to smooch you a bunch.
Just come to this van first.
What's up? I'm Yamcha. I'm really
you gotta
Yamcha.
Do it out
me.
In my van.
We gotta do it in my very sweet van.
My smooching van.
Did you see
van.
My cool scar?
It's a real scar
I'm definitely
that I got from training.
Yamcha.
What kind of training? I won't tell you.
He just has a random cat
if
that
I
he's
had
carrying
the Dragon
around.
Balls, I'd wish for you.
Oh... The Yamcha van probably has, like, wolves on the side.
For sure.
Wolves and, like, lightning.
All the wolves have cool face scars.
So, we'll say it. We'll call it Becky Hafford, mayor, officially held hostage.
In a van.
In a van. In
making
in,
its way out of New East City.
In the Wolf Fang van.
Does anyone care?
The mayor of the people of East City. They elected her.
Is she a popular mayor? She ran unopposed.
That's true. That's true.
I guess we'll find out next week.
Videl and the dog cops, I think, will be on the case.
Yeah.
That's true, yes. The dog cops are so professional.
Well, until then, Jason, how about a reading?
A little bit of a reading? Oh. What's my saying?
What's your saying?
What's my saying? Here's the thing. I've got a little bit of a special reading for you guys. As some of y'all know, some DBZ characters have canonical birthdays, which means they have canonical astrological signs. However, the character that I'm going to read today does not, so we're going to have to do a little bit of research. We got to fake a birthday here.
Who are we talking?
We're talking about King Kai here, Tyler. The way we have to figure this out is we have to use the date that his manga debuted that featured him in it. And the manga that featured King Kai first debuted in Japan on January 18th, which would make him an Aquarius. Yes, thank you.
Hmm.
Me and King Kai
really,
were lots more similar than I thought.
Is that appropriate to King Kai? Like, does anyone know
I don't.
Enough mm. about astrology?
The only thing I know about Aquarius is that I am one.
I can't tell you much about it.
I think they're big on collecting things. And you know, King Kai does collect a lot of goofers and a lot of phone numbers.
And
good for the benefit of humanity.
Yeah, you know, good cars.
Mm-hmm. Alright.
Well, he has the one.
It does, though.
If he could get more, he would.
If there's more room on his planet, he could.
Yeah.
He's got to put in the parking lot. Alright, King Kai, this is your fortune. Today is an important day for you to improve your connections to others. You'll find yourself engaged in fast-paced witty banter and debates, and you can learn a lot here. You're good at seeing both sides of an issue, but the problem is this can lead to indecisiveness and the ability to commit. So choose a path and stick to it, King Kai.
I feel like King Kai is pretty good at choosing his path.
Yeah, I think
it's very similar to Krillin's path, honestly. Which is to leave it alone. Don't touch that bee's hive. That's going to do it for another week of Destructive Discourse. Thank you all for listening in.
Before we go, I want to walk us out of this incredibly funny episode.
Uh-huh.
with this last knee slapper.
You have a final zinger.
I have a final zinger.
Final zinger.
What would Krillin store his files in? A destructo disc.
Doesn't seem safe.
Gordy.
Yes.
Where are you around the internet?
The best place to find me is on Twitter. You can find me at Gordon Murphy, D-E-V. And then you can find Tyler and I on our other podcast called What the Folklore, which is wherever you collect podcasts.
We guarantee. Jason, where are you at?
Well, on this internet, you can find me on Twitter and Tumblr, and the name for both is JCalves. That's JayCalves. That's right.
Aaron, how about you?
I cannot be found on the internet. Well, I probably shouldn't say that.
Not by anyone.
It
sounds like a challenge.
You're not actually here.
You're not in the deep web.
Doing anything on the internet. But I do perform at the Black Box Theater in Dayton, Ohio. I perform on Wednesday nights, but we have shows every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And they're pretty funny.
Dave, how about you?
My fan fictional works can be found at a Scythe, P-S-Y-T-H-E, on Archive of Our Own. And it is very possible that I may write some kind of fanfic about some of the material in this podcast.
Based on these discussions.
Keep an eye on that.
As for me and this show, you can follow us on Twitter at destructo_disc, D-I-S-C. You can email us at destructodiscourse@gmail.com. And you can rate and review us on iTunes. And when you do, you will click the 4-star button.
Why?
Because it refers to Gohan, the Dragon Ball, and the old man.
We demand
both
him.
Of whom I adore.
What about the young man?
He's okay too, I guess.
He's growing on me. But I love that old man, and I want to see him reflected in our iTunes scores.
I want to see him reflected in our eyes.
Give us the Gohan.
If you live in outer space, you can subscribe to this podcast on King iTunes.
Oh, boy. Ah, boy.
You're in.
You did it.
You done did it. Thank you all for listening. This has been Destructo Discourse.
Get out of here. If the road ahead you seem so cold and gray, when night never turns to day, don't you be afraid, you'll fly away. Chala, chala, no time to hesitate, don't wanna search the earth, we're driven by the magic surprise. Oh, chala, chala, be cool, don't be afraid, you got the power to get you through the night. Oh, chala, chala, no time to hesitate, don't wanna search the earth, we're driven by the magic surprise.